This is the Black and Blue Report presented by ABC Insurance Agencies, a better choice for insurance. Now from Studio B, or wherever the Saints or Pelicans might be, here's Sean Kelly.
Hi, everybody. Glad you're here. Welcome in to a Wednesday edition of the Black and Blue Report on this October the 4th. We're just in front of Daniel Salerson's 30th birthday. Yes, indeed. We'll celebrate that this week a little bit. I don't think he knows what to do with number 30. He's shaking his head no. He is here with me, obviously, in Studio B at the Oshkosh Sports Performance Center, where we have a nice show lined up for you today. Sean Fazan from Fox 8 in just a moment to talk about the New Orleans Saints, where things stand here during the bye week. 2-2 now, the record. There is news. I will touch upon that in a moment. Obviously, the Pelicans have their first preseason game under their belts. They lost last night to the Chicago Bulls at the Smoothie King Center, 113-109. And there are some positives and some negatives to talk about in that first preseason game. Three more on the schedule. We'll talk about last night's performance with Jim Eichenhofer from Pelicans.com. And we'll also share with you the entire postgame presser from Alvin Gentry outside the Pelicans locker room. You probably heard a soundbite here and there, but I want you to hear the entire conversation from the head coach. And, of course, we'll get you ready for tomorrow night's Alvin Gentry show, too, before we leave you on this Wednesday. Okay, the Saints news. It is a bye week. Unfortunately, there are newsworthy items. Unfortunately, the injury to Zach Strief is more serious than we had wanted it to be. He is going on IR. John Kuhn, obviously, on IR now with the torn bicep. So some roster moves. There are reports of perhaps John Greco coming into the fold, the former Cleveland Browns lineman. We actually saw him play against the Saints back in the preseason. I think there's going to be a couple other corresponding moves as well this week for the New Orleans Saints. And we'll cover that a little bit probably later in the week with our good friend Mike Triplett. But here today on the Black and Blue Report, we kind of get it Sean Visan's take on things. Here's the Saints get a breath after the two-game road trip and the two-game win streak that they find themselves in just a quick moment. But again, the roster moves, we'll see them unfold this week so they can get set up for next week's game against the Detroit Lions. All right, Jim Eichenhofer still to come, Alvin Gentry still to come. First here, though, in our opening segment of this Wednesday edition of the Black and Blue Report, a visit with Sean Fazan from Fox 8 Sports. Sean Fazan is one of the preeminent experts on the New Orleans Saints, covering the beat for Fox 8, of course, here in New Orleans. He is a part of our Wednesday Black and Blue Report. He's been with us before, of course, and so with that, we say welcome back, Sean Fazan. Good to have you.
Man, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Boy, I tell you what, this conversation is just like we had planned it, huh, Sean? 2-2 going into the bye week. You called it, right?
Right. We knew they had to be 2-2. And I go back to this phrase, it is truly a week-to-week existence in the NFL. After that New England game, how much panic had set in into this entire city because they weren't even competitive in the second half. And they had the great game against Carolina, and then obviously they pitch a shutout against the Dolphins. And look, I don't care how bad an offense is. The NFL today is designed for even the worst offenses to score points. So anytime you get a shutout, certainly you take that. Don't apologize for it. So a little positive momentum for a change as you move out of this first quarter of the season and into the second quarter. And, you know, being 2-2 versus 1-3 is just so much more than just what would indicate just one win. I mean, that one win is just so different just from almost a peace of mind standpoint as you move on with the season.
Well, if anything at all, you've seen the Saints basically reboot their season as a result of the second win in a row.
Yeah, they've kind of stabilized things here. And, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence. I saw the stat on the broadcast on Sunday. I didn't remember the exact numbers, but basically Sean Payton's recent September struggles versus his October success. I don't think that's a coincidence generally at this point in the season. I think you saw it on Sunday. You kind of figure things out. You know who can and who cannot do certain things. You find your identity a little bit. And then you kind of get to that next level of your season, and you just hope when you do that, you have a decent record. You're not already in an early season hole. And this year, fortunately, they're even at 2-2. Nothing to throw a parade over, but still much better than where they've been the last couple of years.
Sean, there may be some obvious points to your answer overall here, but I want you to dig deep here for me. And let's talk about, you know, what changed from weeks 1 and 2 to weeks 3 and 4. If you were to try and not necessarily make a list, but at least try to identify some of the things that made the turnaround possible.
I think the biggest thing you see defensively, you don't see the communication breakdowns in the secondary, which when that happens, catastrophe follows. We saw, I mean, how many busted plays did you see against Minnesota and against New England with wide open players scoring touchdowns? And obviously it led to a kind of a demise defensively. But when you have the improved secondary, the improved communication, the emergence of Marshon Lattimore, the emergence of King Crawley. I mean, that personnel move was puzzling to start the season. Now that he's back, it only seems more so. So I think he's your guy, or at least in the regular rotation. And I think offensively, it kind of goes to what we said earlier. You know, this offense can be complex, and sometimes it takes you a few games to get settled in. I think it takes Sean Payton a little while to figure out who can do what. I think we're starting to see who's rising to the top of the running back rotation. I think they've been able to survive what's been a tough go for the first four games with the offensive line. And Drew's still steady. So I think if you add all those factors up and you figure out ways to win, that's why you're 2-2 right now. I think that's been the biggest change, though, is I think from a pure tangible defensive standpoint, there's less secondary breakdowns, which you see fewer big plays because of that, and I think it gives yourself a chance to win. And, look, no turnovers as well, and creating takeaways defensively as well.
Yeah, something we haven't seen the last couple of years, being on the right side of that equation through even just a quarter of the season as has been played already. Sean Fazan with us here on the Black and Blue Report. All right, Sean, into the bye week now, and obviously you've got a couple of good quarterbacks still on the horizon here in Matt Stafford, Aaron Rodgers. Yes, the schedule's a little different. I don't find it to be too much easier than what you've already seen the Saints go through, but just as far as storylines in general, as this team and the media that covers it emerges from the bye week and the jet lag of London, what are the storylines initially that you think have to be discussed?
Well, you're confident now. And, you know, that old phrase Sean Payton's been saying a lot these last couple of years, confidence comes from demonstrated ability. Well, they've shown they can do it 2 straight weeks. The key now is consistency, staying at level head, not getting too high off of a couple of wins. Hopefully the bye week will help with that. You go into the bye week, hopefully come back out, get a little bit healthier, which I think will be key. But, you know, look, there's no such thing as an easy schedule in the NFL. I mean, if we were to look at the schedule now versus the beginning of the season, the L.A. Rams look like a tough game. The Buffalo Bills now look like a tough game. So there's no such thing as an easy schedule in the NFL. You got to play each week as it's the most important game on the schedule. So I think from a big picture standpoint, you do have a lot of young faces. Now you have a little bit of success. Can you deal with this success the right way and really emerge in the hierarchy of the NFL? Because let's face it, as good as they've played, and they're 2-2, and that's great, they're still in last place in the NFC South, if I'm not mistaken. So you still have to play it out here and know that this is definitely a marathon, not a sprint. You feel good right now, but there's still a long way to go.
No doubt. Is there a question mark or a worry that you have, Sean, with this team moving forward?
Still, they've improved in the pass rush. I still would like to see a little bit more out of the pass rush. I think that could help, especially when you talk about some of the elite quarterbacks going to face here in the next couple of weeks. You know, I think they figure things out offensively, as I said, with the running back position. And Michael Thomas is still Michael Thomas. And really, it's just a matter of staying on top of that turnover, you know, takeaway giveaway margin, because I think, as we've seen, especially if they produce takeaways and not turn the ball over, it's a winning formula for this organization. So that would be my biggest concern. I don't know if they're ever going to be an elite pass rushing team. Hopefully they can stay get a little more consistent in that regard.
All right, very good. No Saints football this weekend, so what? High school football for you? LSU, Florida? Yes. What do you want to do?
Yeah, a little bit of everything, right? LSU, Florida. We'll see if I can bounce back. Man, that'll be tough. And in high school football, it's we're getting into the grind of district play. We're already halfway through the high school football season, so it flies by, but it's fun. Falls in New Orleans are a fun time for us, so we'll stay busy, no doubt about it.
All right, we'll see you on the TV, especially on that Friday night program, as you have so many good high school storylines emerging here late in the season. Sean, thanks again, and I appreciate it. I'll be sure to see you next week when the Saints get back to work.
Yes, sir. See you soon.
All right. Sean Fazan, Fox 8 Sports, here with us on the Black and Blue Report.
There are plenty of good reasons to attend the Sanderson Farms Championship. About 150,000 good reasons. Batson Children's Hospital, part of Children's of Mississippi, averages 150,000 patient visits a year. And each year, proceeds from the championship support these patients by donating to Friends of Children's Hospital. Last year, the championship raised over $1 million for Friends. So join us for the Sanderson Farms Championship, October 23rd through 29th at the Country Club of Jackson. Good reason for a great time.
50 years ago, a groovy new golf gig first teed off in Mississippi. The tournament, now known as the Sanderson Farms Championship. To celebrate, join us October 23rd through 29th at the Country Club of Jackson for first-class golf, waves of fun, and 100% natural Sanderson Farms chicken. All to raise money for Friends of Children's Hospital. Don't miss this 50th anniversary celebration. Visit SandersonFarmsChampionship.com for tickets today.
We're talking Pelicans basketball on the Black and Blue Report.
We continue on this Wednesday. Alvin Gentry's post-game presser from last night's first preseason game still to come. We welcome into Studio B our good friend Jim Eichenhofer from Pelicans.com, who had been with us on Tuesdays all last season. No more on Tuesday because Black and Blue Report is a Monday, Wednesday, Friday affair. So welcome in on a Wednesday. Is this okay, sir?
It's great. It's good to be here. They didn't get rid of the Tuesday show so that they could push me out of the equation, did they?
Certainly not.
that's good. No. I'm sure I definitely will be able to adjust and show up on what other days that you guys need me. So
yes, we'll have David Wesley at some point. Wesley Wednesdays. We'll have to come up with Jumping Gym Friday or something like that, or.
There you go.
Monday with Ike or something like that. Obviously,
no
throughout the season, you'll want to check out Jim's work at Pelicans.com. He was there last night in a game where we'll not focus on the final score, number one, because the Pelicans lost.
Right.
But number two, it's a preseason game. You got to kind of dig a little deeper here, and that's why I wanted Jim to come in today after watching the first run out of this new-look Pelicans squad. What'd you take away from last night's game?
I like the way that DeMarcus Cousins put it after the game, where he said it was kind of the perfect way to start preseason, in that there were a lot of good things that they did that showed, like, hey, when we're clicking and we're playing the way we want to play, a lot of good things can happen, which was the first half. But then in the second half, when they kind of got away from a lot of the basic stuff that they were trying to do, it went the other way. So I thought he framed it really well in looking at it, in that they could see, even though it's only a preseason game and you're throwing a lot of different lineups out there and the other team is doing the same thing, you could kind of somewhat definitively see what works and what doesn't work as far as this team goes now with, obviously they have three more preseason games to work on things and get ready.
What happened in the third quarter? I guess that was the most disappointing to me after being so explosive in the first half.
I thought the pace slowed down. I'm not sure what the factors were behind that, if there was some fatigue setting in. You can play pickup all off season against each other, and it's not the same thing as a game setting. It's never going to be, as much as you try, it's never going to be the same intensity. And it's obviously not the same format as far as the timing and the breaks that you get and, the length of the game. So I wonder a little bit if maybe that was part of it, but it just seemed like they kind of ran out of gas as far as energy-wise and how much they were pushing the ball up and down the court. And get first quarter was a bunch of runouts and easy baskets, and it seemed like everybody was all over the court, but it definitely wasn't the same brand of basketball in the second half.
Yeah, Alvin Gentry had said, at least to me before the game, he said, hey, my guys are tired. I've worked them really hard. They've responded to it. As a matter of fact, he's giving them the day off today. As a result, so maybe your theory bodes or fits here, I guess, is
sure.
What I'm saying about maybe it was an energy thing, a out of gas thing in the third quarter.
Yeah, and I think Daniel and I talked about this after the game on the post game show last night, that some of it too was just shooting wise they weren't going to be able to sustain the way they shot the ball in the first half.
No.
And they shot 70% or something like that, and as much as you try to play exactly the same way, no matter what the situation is, no matter what the circumstances are, it's human nature. They're not robots. You're gonna play with more energy when more shots go in. it was a pretty big drought at the beginning of the third quarter, and it felt like that kind of affected everything as far as just how much energy, not just the players, but the crowd had. It was a long stretch of 7 or 8 minutes, where I think where they only had 3 baskets as a team, so that was definitely a rough stretch there.
Anybody else? Let's take away the big four, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody else kind of jump out at you or disappoint you in some way last night?
I thought Etuan Moore has had a really good camp so far. It seemed like he played well during the inter-squad scrimmage the other day. From what I can tell, he's played really well in what Alvin Gentry said. He's played well in practices, and he was really good last night. 16 points, 4 for 6 on three-pointers. He just seems like he has a lot of confidence in his shot right now. And going back to last year, I think he was one of the guys that got off to a slow start. It seemed like across the board, a lot of the perimeter guys didn't shoot well, but then picked it up later as the season went on. So it seems like he's kind of building on that as far as one of the guys that could be, not sure what exactly his role is going to be. I know they've talked about possibly starting him at small forward. But if he does come off the bench, I think the way he played last night is exactly what you hope to get from him all season.
Drew Holiday is the off guard. What'd you think?
I thought he played well. I thought one of the more interesting specific aspects of the game was just, it was funny how Rondo talked about a couple days ago how he's been, the most surprising thing about Drew Holiday has been he's a good cutter off the ball. And he did that 2 or 3 times last night, where Rondo was kind of surveying the floor from the baseline and Drew just cut to the basket and it was an easy layup. So it seemed like those two guys did click well together for a lot of the stretches they were on the court.
It's funny you mentioned Rondo working off the baseline. I mentioned last night, I think on the radio, that I felt like Rajon Rondo and Ricky Rubio are the two guards that work best from under the rim along that baseline.
Yeah.
Whereas, like when you watch a Chris Paul, he really works the floor well from up high.
Mm-hmm.
And if you spin the floor,
sure,
and work it from underneath, from baseline out toward half court, I guess I know I've seen Rondo play a lot.
Sure.
But it did kind of surprise me a little bit last night that he is so comfortable working from that side of the floor.
It's kind of reminiscent a little bit, too, of Steve Nash, where he would drive all the way through the paint and come out the other side, and the entire time that he was dribbling on the baseline, he's looking for guys cutting. If there wasn't necessarily someone open, he would just keep dribbling almost in a circle, in a half circle. And that's an interesting way that you put it, but I mean, it's kind of the same thing that when you're a point guard, if you're at the top of the circle and you can see the whole floor from that spot, it's the same thing on the baseline, where you can see everything, and it's a dangerous spot for defenses to try to defend a point guard who can pass well, because the angle of everything changes as far as how you have to deny the ball, and there's just so many different things that open up when you have a point guard who can make passes from that spot. So he had 8 assists last night, and maybe 3 of them were that same kind of play where he's just calmly dribbling, not playing too fast. Sees a guy cutting, just throws a nice drop-off pass, and it's an easy basket.
Good call on the Steve Nash reference there. I didn't even think of that. I was just thinking of active guys, and heck, how do you forget about the Steve Nash, Alvin Gentry connection there? So, I mean, that makes total sense. Obviously, they're off today. They'll go back to work tomorrow as a part of a travel day to start that 2-game trip, Oklahoma City Friday and Chicago again on Sunday. What would you like to see improve? Give me a bullet point or two here as to what would be observation points for you this weekend.
I think the biggest thing in the Oklahoma City game, and granted, we don't know exactly how Oklahoma City's going to use their lineup or how many minutes they're going to play their main guys, but defensively, based on, for example, how many threes you gave up last night against the Bulls, they had 16, and some of the challenges that you had as far as covering the floor. Pelicans have 2 big guys, obviously. They're always going to have 2 big guys on the court to start games. I'm curious to see how much the Pelicans can improve defensively, especially since the challenge that the Thunder present is so unique that they could possibly play, Paul George is a really big wing, like 6'9", 6'10", so you can't really go with a small lineup because you need a small forward that has size. Then you can also play Carmelo at the 4, who is a very difficult guy to cover, especially if you're a bigger guy that doesn't, I think that's going to be really fascinating, even though it's a preseason game. just to see how the Pelicans match up against those guys, because they present so many different things that you don't see any other team be able to bring to the floor.
I'm all for anything fascinating regarding a preseason game, just so you know. Yes, because it was so much fun early on last night. Kind of, you know, hey, new everything.
Right.
Here we
right.
go. And then the second half, I was like, this is hot garbage. Let's move on. So
yeah,
there's
no doubt
about that.
Yeah.
Again, the final last night, 113-109. Bulls win it. Those two teams will see each other again on Sunday. Hey, by the way, you and Daniel, big doings in Chicago. Saturday is the Chicago Marathon, which is like one of the coolest days of the year in Chicago.
Didn't know that.
So much fun.
Right.
I went there for that years and years ago. I did not run in it. Although nobody here could fact check that. I guess I could make that up. Anyway, have fun with that. That's really cool. And Alvin Gentry, by the way, will be with us here in just a moment. We're going to listen to the entirety of his post-game presser. We'll address some of the things that Jim and I talked about and more in just a moment.
In 1907, Dixie Beer was a balanced, refreshing lager, brewed with love and top-quality ingredients. It would grow to become something that connected us, the neighborhood beer of every New Orleans neighborhood. And now, Dixie is back to that 1907 recipe, original and reinvented, just like its hometown. Visit DixieBeer.com to learn more, and always drink Dixie responsibly. Dixie Brewing Company, New Orleans, Louisiana.
If you don't want to miss out on any of the action, get connected with your New Orleans Pelicans 24/7, 365. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter for exclusive prizes and giveaways. Plus text with all the latest breaking news right on your phone with Pelicans mobile alerts. Visit Pelicans.com for information on these great features. Plus sign up for Pelicans Insider with weekly updates from the Pelicans. Join the conversation today.
Follow us on Twitter at Black Blue Report.
Pelicans and Bulls last night at the Smoothie King Center. Again, the 113-109. Thanks to Jim Eichenhofer for stopping by. And as promised, let's let you listen in to head coach Alvin Gentry's postgame presser at the Smoothie King Center last night. Coach, in a game where we saw a little bit of everything, what did you take away from the first preseason game?
Well, you know, I thought we got off to a good start. And, you know, I thought we were playing with force and pushing the basketball, moving the basketball, and, you know, obviously getting some easy baskets here and there. But, I mean, realistically, we're not going to shoot 73% for the game. You know, that's understood. I thought that we started maybe over-dribbling a little much in the second quarter. Got us in a little bit of trouble. We stopped making cuts, which kind of slowed down the offense. And then I thought defensively, our transition defense, it wasn't very good. And we have to do a better job of getting everyone back so that we can pick up. We were scrambling too much in our transition defense, really the last three quarters, as far as picking them up and having everybody set and not scrambling around. So it's an area where we got to get better at that particular area also, especially when they're running out. And then we got to do a little bit better job of guarding dribble penetration. I thought Don did a good job of kind of getting us on his hip or getting us on his back and then taking the ball in and putting us in a real tough situation, our big guys as far as helping and then leaving their big guys open or leaving the offensive board open.
Guys, in some different roles than what we've known them for, I know we've seen Drew Holiday play off the ball, but the bulk of that coming tonight, what did you see in his play and how he worked alongside Rajon Rondo?
Oh, I thought he did a good job. I thought Drew did a good job. This is all new stuff, you know, as far as him playing off the ball and not being the primary ball handler. But, you know, he's going to be fine at it, you know. And Rondo is still trying to, you know, he's trying to learn about our guys and where they want the ball and the plays that we can call, that he can call. On the fly to get the balls and the ball to the guys in the position that they want it. So it's the first preseason game, and you know, like I said, I thought there were some good things that we can take from it, and there's also some things that obviously we got to work on.
just kind of an example of how high this team can get in that first quarter, and then if things slow down in that third quarter, like, is this just sort of dichotomy of where this team can be?
I was going to say, I think you're probably right there, you know, Scott, in that we have to the big thing that we've got to establish is consistency. You know, like I said, it was it's a little bit crazy because, you know, we played so well the first quarter that, you know, I mean, 47 points is a lot of points to get in a quarter in any situation, especially when you're walking out and you're playing your first preseason game. So we'd like to have something somewhere in the middle of that, and then we'd like to have something, you know, the last three quarters where we're somewhere, I mean, we have to be a lot higher than we were in those quarters because I didn't think we played the level that we would have to win basketball games.
Coach, were you surprised that you played Anthony and DeMarcus as much as you did? You said you wanted to play mid-20s and they got over 30 minutes.
We got to get in shape, you know, so I wasn't going to play them very much the fourth quarter if I was going to play them at all. So that's why I decided to leave them in and have them blow it out a little bit. And, you know, like I said, we got basically three preseason games, so we got to start getting our legs, basketball legs. So that's why they played. That's why I probably played Drew and Rondo a little more than I'd like to also. But, you know, when I thought about it and, you know, and like I said, I wasn't going to play them in the fourth quarter. So, you know, that's the reason that I think both of them played, you know, about 32 minutes or something.
What do you think about your rotational guys, Miller, Moore, Diallo? What did you see from them?
Well, I think Chet is a young player, you know, and he's going to learn. I thought he did some good things also, got out and ran, had a couple of block shots. He's got to learn defensively, you know, the personnel in this league, you know, like a guy like Miritich and what he, you know, what he really likes to do and understand the concept of guarding a guy like that. But, you know, like I said, he's a young player and he'll learn that. But I thought his energy was there. You know, Darius, I thought, you know, he's in a situation where he's trying to find himself and learn a system and adjust to a system. You know, he's had some very good practices and had some good moments in the game tonight. He's another guy that, you know, is just going to he'll learn and he'll figure it out.
Was it promising to see how well AD and DeMarcus played together in that first half while they were sharing the floor?
Yeah, but it doesn't surprise me. I think they've been playing that way. And what we've got to get them doing is that we have to make sure that we're in a conditioning situation where we can continue to do that, you know, the second quarter. Or when I take one of those guys out and they're not in there together, then we got to still maintain the offensive attack mode that we've been in.
Account for the ball slowing down so much in the third quarter. It seemed like there wasn't as much passing, wasn't as much tempo.
I thought we slowed down mainly because we weren't moving. We weren't cutting and we weren't moving. And they started to deny the basketball on the swings. And that's when you have to have great back cuts with force and you have to have dribble handoffs and things like that. And I just thought we got a little stagnant in that. But that's something that we're going to have to take a look at and try to correct in the next, you know, in the next 2 weeks.
Communication on defense, it seemed like there were times where guys didn't close out on shooters or maybe didn't pick the right guy to defend. Do you feel like they were vocal enough on that end?
It wasn't so much the talk. Like I said, I thought our transition defense struggled, and because of that, we were always kind of, you know, chasing and trying to get caught up. We never really got back to the point where we were matched up and we could set our defense. So we were scrambling a lot. I thought we did a good job of talking, but we can't talk when you're scrambling and you're playing a team like that that got the good shooters that can space the floor. And so you get yourself in trouble.
Do you account any of that for trying maybe too much on the offensive rebounding edge? Is that part of it? Is that part of the equation of the transition?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so because some of those was even on made baskets. So, you know, we just got to, on the rise of the shot, we just got to make sure that we're sprinting back because, you know, we're going to be playing teams that runs a lot more than the Chicago team. So you've got to get yourself back and get your defense set. But I was going to say, you know, that being said, I thought there was a lot of good things that came out of it. And, you know, and I think at this stage right now, if we were playing perfect basketball, you know, I don't know what you would do.
All right, more from Coach tomorrow night on the Alvin Gentry Show. That will be on the radio 99.5 FM. That's WRNO, the flagship of the New Orleans Pelicans radio network. And we will have that half-hour program for you. Daniel at 6:30 p.m. 30-minute show that will be all Pelicans, and obviously an extensive visit with Alvin Gentry. We'll talk about the first preseason game a little bit more, and then we will preview that first road trip that sees the Pelicans in Oklahoma City on Friday night and then in Chicago on Sunday. Tomorrow also is Daniel Salerson's birthday, and since there's no Black and Blue Report, we wish him a very happy birthday. Life as he knows it is about to end. Or at least his metabolism will change shortly. Happy 30th, Daniel. All right. Thanks again to Sean Fazan today and Jim Eichenhofer, too. On Friday, Mike Triplett from ESPN.com stops by to talk Saints with us. We'll also check in with the folks up in Oklahoma City and get a preview of the Thunder. We plan on talking to Brett Dawson. And as we have told you before, who knows who will stop by here on this podcast. I'm Sean Kelly. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow night on the Alvin Gentry Show, and certainly back here on tape for another edition of the Black and Blue Report.